This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
How great to have with us this morning Dr. Bob Murphy. Bob is an adjunct scholar of the Mises Institute. He's teaching right now at our Mises University. Bob is an economist with the Institute for Energy Research in Houston. He's author of two books recently, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Capitalism and one that is really causing a stir, The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Great Depression and the New Deal. So, Bob, why is this such a hot issue, and why the heck is it so controversial about what happened in, by most people's standards, in ancient days when Herbert Hoover and Franklin Roosevelt were presidents?
Well, the reason it's a big deal, of course, is that we're being told, and correctly so, I think, that this is the worst depression, or they call it recession, but we think it's a depression, since the great one of the 30s. And so it's really relevant now to figure out and decide what do we think were the causes of the Great Depression, and were the policies of Hoover and FDR actually good things or bad things? And one of the chief ironies here is that what FDR did was just an elaboration or an extension of what Hoover did. That it's completely false, this notion that Hoover sat back and did nothing and then FDR came in to save the day.
Yeah, I mean, Hoover, like so many people, was only decent out of office. I mean, he was just a monster, wasn't he? I mean, he originated the whole crazy agricultural program. And, of course, as you've pointed out, these massive deficits, historically unprecedented deficits, and interventions of all sort in the economy. And even though Roosevelt campaigned on a sort of a laissez-faire platform, he, of course, made everything even worse. But aren't we told, you know, maybe this is true about every important historical event, but it seems like we're always told a fib in the official story. So they want us to believe that Hoover was some kind of laissez-faire libertarian guy, and it was only Franklin Roosevelt instituting, they claim, of course, crazily, Keynesian policies that saved the day, saved the average person, saved capitalism, saved America, saved the world. And so therefore, we should all bow down before Franklin Roosevelt.
Well, you're exactly right that it's what you find in these historical analyses and what we're taught. You know, my area, of course, is economics, and I know that what we're taught about the Industrial Revolution or what it would take to end slavery or why slavery was such a profitable system and only government intervention could save it, you know, because it was a pure outgrowth of capitalism, that sort of thing. I mean, we know these things. It's not just that they're wrong. Another myth, of course, is that without the progressive labor legislation and workplace safety legislation, that the factories right now would be just like they were in 1903, right? That's what we're taught as youngsters. And that, of course, is just completely crazy. All of those are myths. And the same thing is true when it comes to the Great Depression, that the only way the official story makes sense is if Herbert Hoover is a laissez-faire, do-nothing reactionary. So then that explains why things got so awful under him and then why FDR's New Deal rescued the economy. But in fact, you start looking at Hoover's speeches, if you look at statistics of his actual policies, and you look at his autobiography after the fact, in all three cases, you'll see Hoover quite proudly said, I am not going to be the sort of liquidationist that all my predecessors were. And then you step back and say, okay, well, under his predecessors, we didn't have the Great Depression. And then under him, we did get the Great Depression. So what does that mean about these interventionist policies?
Yeah, we did have a do-nothing reactionary in the great Warren G. Harding during the Depression of 1920 and 21. So why wasn't that longer?
Right, you're exactly right. That both the federal government and the Federal Reserve did the exact opposite things during the 1920 and 21 Depression. And yet, of course, the 20s were the roaring 20s. Now, some of that, especially later on, I think was due to the Fed fueling a bubble. So some of the apparent prosperity of the 20s was illusory. But a lot of it was legitimate, that you know, Andrew Mellon, under Harding and Coolidge, he cut marginal income tax rates very significantly, much more than even under the Reagan years. And so, I mean, all sorts of what you call supply-side free market thinking going into the 20s. And so there were plenty of legitimate reasons that should have been a prosperous period, that a lot of homes got electricity for the first time. And so that, in turn, allowed for vacuum cleaners and other things to really that today we take as necessities, but back then they were luxuries. So a lot of things changed in American households in the 20s. And yet, if the Keynesian and monetarist theories of what happened in the 30s is correct, then the 20s should have been awful. Because during 20 and 21, like you say, Harding did nothing and the Federal Reserve actually raised interest rates and tried to choke off inflation.
I love Harding. He pulled out the U.S. troops from Haiti where they were occupying Haiti and stopped the plan of the U.S. to write the Haitian Constitution, said it was none of America's business. The Haitians should write their own constitution. So, like Harding playing poker all the time and having drinking parties and other similarly harmless affairs rather than erecting a totalitarian state.
Right. I mean, that was one of the joys of working on the book, is that just reading all these anecdotes about Harding and then even Coolidge in particular, he just had some great quotes to the effect, I'm not going to do it justice, but something like this Coolidge talking, saying, you know, 9 times out of 10 people coming in to see you in the Oval Office, or he called in the White House, are asking you for something that they have no business asking for, and I've found that if you just remain perfectly silent within 2 minutes, they leave. Something like that. I mean, that's just great stuff for a president to be saying.
So here we're living in the aftermath of another bubble, the bubble that was generated after 9/11 especially, and also, as you pointed out, in reaction to the dot-com bust, which itself caused another bubble. So Greenspan and then Bernanke have done things that make Bush and Obama have done things that really on a Rooseveltian level, or maybe even worse.
Well, yeah, that's certainly true. And what's ironic is when I tell people, folks, I don't mean to alarm you, but what your government is doing right now is the exact same thing that they did in the 30s. And at first people don't believe me, but then I say, but the media is telling you that. Every time they do something, they say, not since the Great Depression have we done this. So, you know, you don't have to take my word for it. The only thing where you have to take my interpretation is to say that maybe the conventional interpretation, of course, is that, oh, well, it's because the free market economy dug itself into such a hole back in the 30s and then now today that the government reluctantly had to assume all this power and money to be able to fix things. You know, and the politicians, if they had their own way, would just give us all the power back, but, you know, reluctantly they need to save the day because the market falters on its own. So, I mean, that's the alternate explanation, but to me it seems like Occam's razor says, well, no, the 2 times in history when the U.S. federal government intervened the most into the economy was clearly the Great Depression, World War II era, and then today, and these are clearly the two worst periods in U.S. economic history. And so I think the causality is pretty clear there. The government starts trying to take over, things falter. We know that if it goes all the way, we know pure socialism doesn't work, and so why do we think half socialism is going to be a good thing?
But here we are. Aren't we seeing all these green shoots? Isn't just at what the cost of $11 trillion or whatever, they've made the stock market go back up a little bit. I mean, isn't everything really getting better and better in every way?
Well, no, I don't think so. My feeling is that we're going to be in this for many years, and that I frankly don't understand why you have a lot of these supposed free market commentators on CNBC and other places where they're thinking, okay, we've hit bottom and now we're through the worst of this. When they look at all the interventions, I mean, the government has literally partially nationalized the entire financial industry, and then beyond the actual ownership of bank stocks, they're coming up with boards to determine how much executives can be paid at these places. They're trying to take over the energy markets with the Waxman-Markey bill. They're trying to take over healthcare. So they literally own car companies. I mean, how can the government do all these things and that not have a hugely negative impact on what's called the real economy? I mean, if you believe in free markets at all, that has to have an impact. It can't just be, oh, a 6-month down period in GDP and then things turn around. So I think we're going to be in this for years to come, that they're on top of all those direct interventions. Of course, they're just adding debt as if there's no tomorrow, literally. I mean, that's going to weigh down on things. And of course, they're going to raise taxes to pay for it all. And then the kicker in the background, you've got Ben Bernanke pumping in more money than has ever been pumped in before into the financial sector. So, I mean, everything. If you asked me 3 years ago to come up with a plan to yield very bad, stagflation in terms of high price inflation, high unemployment, I couldn't have come up with a better plan than what they're doing right now.
Do you think we actually face hyperinflation?
I'm not sure. I mean, because when people talk about that, they have in mind Zimbabwe or Germany between the wars. So I don't know if it's going to be that bad.
What about Nixon inflation?
I definitely will go out on a limb and say I think it's going to be the worst price inflation we've ever seen in the U.S. So that means worse than it was in the 70s, worse even than the during the First World War, there was large price inflation as well.
Wow.
So I do think it's going to be, you know, the worst, because their trade-off is going to be at any given time, they know if they try to pull back at that point, it's going to worsen the economy in the short run at least. You know, that's going to cause unemployment if they, what the press would call tightening the screws, or if the Fed tightens its monetary policy. So I think, given the situation they're going to be in, that the current administration and all the other sort of feel-good policies they have in place, that I don't believe they would err on the side of causing more unemployment and lower inflation. I think they're going to say the way we get out of this, especially with all the money they're going to be borrowing, it's going to be in the government's interest to have price inflation try to erode some of that debt away.
But doesn't Bernanke say that, gee, don't worry about price inflation. When it starts, he's going to take out all the new money?
Well, what's funny is that's only now one minor plank in his plan, that his op-ed that came out in the Wall Street Journal, I think last week, where he was talking about the Fed's exit strategy, he listed several tools that he has, and only the very last one that he devoted, I think literally like a sentence or two to, was the idea, and of course we can sell off the assets on our balance sheet and suck some of those reserves out. All the other tools were about paying interest on reserves and other ways to sort of get the banks to sit on this money that he's pumped into the system. So now like his rhetoric is changing, because you're right, originally that is what he said. He said, don't worry, we'll suck this out when we need to. And now it's more that, no, when this becomes a problem, we'll basically bribe bankers to not let it fester, or that we'll just postpone the day of reckoning. So they're even backing away from the notion that we'll suck it all out when we need to.
But aren't they claiming that banks who are not lending are evil wreckers and Trotskyites or something and have to be persecuted?
Well, it's funny. I mean, certainly many politicians are saying that. And that's actually why I thought price inflation was going to kick in even earlier in 2009, because when Obama was first inaugurated in that climate, there were plenty of people saying, what's the point of this $700 billion TARP package that we did if the banks are just sitting on the money, that you're supposed to be lending it out to boost spending, right? So that's what the mentality was. So I thought the banks were going to be pressured to lend that money out, but yet the Fed right now is paying interest on reserves, which is the exact opposite thing of what you would do if you really wanted them to make more loans. And so a lot of academic economists who are monetarists, they're baffled. They don't understand. They're saying, Ben, why are you doing this? You know, and we know, that what happened in the Great Depression was there wasn't enough money creation, so why are you bribing banks to not make new loans? They're baffled. And of course, part of the explanation is that I don't think Bernanke is actually doing what he tells us his plan is.
What is his plan?
I wish I knew. I'd make a fortune speculating. It's hard to say. I'm certainly not advancing this as a definite prediction, but I mean, I know a lot of people that some would dismiss as conspiracy nuts. They say, well, look, we've been thinking for some time that they want to sort of, merge currencies and so forth, and they want to get Americans off the dollar. Well, you're not going to get them to do that unless the dollar really takes a sharp dive in its value. And so I know some people are wondering if maybe part of what's going on is this, this attempt to sort of generate large price inflation to then justify in the midst of a crisis that we have to discontinue the dollar. But again, I haven't done enough. I'm not saying that's what I think is happening, but that's the kind of thing that might be going. What I clearly reject is the idea that Bernanke's trying to get banks to lend money, and for some reason he made a mistake and is paying interest on reserves and doesn't realize the contradiction.
You've talked about maybe there's a bubble. The next huge bubble is in Treasury securities.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think that right now there is a bubble in Treasuries, and that, I mean, it just, on the face of it, it doesn't really make sense that in the midst of a global crisis caused by the Fed pumping in too much liquidity. And that's not just an Austrian theory at this point. I mean, many mainstream commentators are saying Greenspan kept interest rates too low for too long, which means in practice he pumped in too much money, that because of that crisis, then everyone flocks to the dollar, or that when the U.S. federal government is in the midst of telling us that it's going to double the national debt relative to the GDP within 10 years, and so that's even what the CBO says. So, of course, the real number, I think, is going to be a lot bigger. But, when they're telling us these are our plans for how much we plan on borrowing, I mean, to give your listeners some idea, I think the CBO report says that the federal deficit will not fall below $1 trillion for many years, for a few years. And then it'll be for a while. And then again, in like 2018, 2019, again, it'll go up above $1 trillion. And that's, again, with the rosy scenarios that the CBO uses. So, I mean, there's plenty of borrowing that the government is telling us this is what we're going to do over the next decade. And it seems crazy to me that in that environment, the dollar would keep appreciating and the Treasury yields would keep falling. So I think there was a panic in 2008. People flocked to what they ironically thought was a safe asset, U.S. debt, U.S. government debt. But I think in retrospect, years from now, we're going to look back and say, what were we thinking? Just like many investors now are looking at the housing bubble years and saying, what were we thinking in 2005?
Dr. Bob Murphy, thanks for all you're doing to explain the economic truth to people and about the effects of actual government policies. Take a look at Bob's archive on LouRockwell.com. Read his books, the politically incorrect guide to capitalism and the politically incorrect guide to the Depression and the New Deal. If you look at any of his articles, those books, little covers at the bottom of the article, and you'll be able to click on them. Highly recommend. Bob, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Mr. Rockwell.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. Thanks for listening.